بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. سبحان الذي أسرى بعبده ليلا من المسجد الحرام ليلا من المسجد الحرام إلى المسجد الأقصى الذي باركنا حوله لنريه من آياتنا، إنه هو السميع البصير. وآتينا موسى الكتاب وجعلناه هدى لبني إسرائيل ألا تتخذوا من دوني وكيلا، ذرية من حملنا مع نوح، إنه كان عبدا شكورا. وقضينا إلى بني إسرائيل في الكتاب لتفسدن في الأرض مرتين ولتعلن علوا كبيرا. فإذا جاء وعد أولاهما بعثنا عليكم عبادا لنا أولي بأس شديد، فجاسوا خلال الديار، وكان وعدا مفعولا. ثم رددنا لكم الكرة عليهم وأمددناكم بأموال وبنين وجعلناكم أكثر نفيرا. إن أحسنتم أحسنتم لأنفسكم، وإن أسأتم فلها، فإذا جاء وعد الآخرة ليسوءوا وجوهكم وليدخلوا المسجد كما دخلوه أول مرة وليتبروا ما علوا تتبيرا. لا 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 لا. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, يا إخوان بالفلسطين. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, يا إخوان بالفلسطين. اللهم انصر الإخوان الفلسطين. So sad to see your children suffering, so sad to see your children crying, so sad to see your children dying. Your children are depending on you, and this ain't something new to you. Oh, your children are depending on you, and this ain't something new to you. The cries of your children are so loud, and I'm sure you know what it's all about. The cries of your children are so loud, and I'm sure you know what it's all about. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, يا إخوان بالفلسطين. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, يا إخوان بالفلسطين. اللهم انصر الإخوان في الفلسطين. So sad to see your children suffering, so sad to see your children crying, so sad to see your children dying. so innocent at the end, stone throwing their only way. So innocent at the end, stone throwing their only way. Your children are the most beautiful creatures with smiling faces, their main features. Your children are the most beautiful creatures with smiling faces, their main features. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, ya ikhwan bil Filistin. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, ya ikhwan bil Filistin. Allahumma ansur al mujahideen fil Filistin. So sad to see your children suffering, so sad to see your children crying, so sad to see your children dying. Seeing stones flying and bombs dropping, but you'll never ever see them giving in. Seeing stones flying and bombs dropping, but you'll never ever see them giving in. How much pain they have to endure, and yet their hearts are so pure. How much pain they have to endure, and yet their hearts are so pure. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, ya ikhwan bil Filistin. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, oh Palestine, ya ikhwan bil Filistin. Allahumma ansur al ikhwan fi Filistin. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, wa kafa wa salamun ala ibadah allazina istafa ma ba'd. A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. سبحان الذي أسرى بعبده ليلا من المسجد الحرام إلى المسجد الأقصى الذي باركنا حوله لنريه من آياتنا إنه هو السميع البصير. صدق الله العظيم. My dear respected ulamas, elders and friends in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today's talk, inshallah, will begin from the period of 1967 war up to middle of 1980s. The main event in between this is the 1973 war, also called the War of Ramadan or the Yom Kippur War. As we have been looking at the Zionist ideologies and ploys and plots to destroy the Muslim Ummah, and in particular the Masjid al-Aqsa Haramain and the Palestinian people. After the conquest of Jerusalem al-Quds in 1967, several things took place, two of which I mentioned last time. The land laws and the law of absentee, whereupon they confiscated the Palestinian properties and land. Thereafter, they began the destruction and the dismantling of the Palestinian people. In particularly, the emphasis converged upon Masjid al-Aqsa Haramain, so that in the very first few days after the 1967 war, they destroyed what was called the Al-Maghribi quarters, immediately on the right-hand side of Masjid al-Aqsa as you face it from Qubbat al-Sakhra. That is the place opposite the Wailing Wall or Al-Buraq Wall. That area was known as Al-Maghribi quarters because a lot of Moroccan brothers used to live there. And they destroyed this on the pretext of looking for ruins of Hazrat Sulaiman al-Islam's temple, and thereby validating their authority upon Jerusalem and Al-Quds, and particularly Masjid al-Aqsa. However, what they discovered was totally contrary to what they were looking for. What they discovered in the excavation was an Umayyad palace, a palace built by the Umayyad Khalifas And in fact, it threw out their theory and re-emphasized the Muslims' heritage to Al-Quds. The destruction of towards Masjid al-Aqsa and their emphasis carried on. Harassment of Muslims began. The laws, the Israeli government passed the law allowing the Jews to enter Masjid al-Aqsa and pray therein. And Muslims could not stop this. The Jews, the Jewish fundamentalists, used to come in groups under the barricades of Israeli army and push the Muslims out of their way. They would perform their prayers and then walk out in an arrogant manner. In 1981, bombs were found on the gates of Masjid al-Aqsa in an attempt to blow them up. In 1982, an Israeli was actually arrested attempting to blow Masjid al-Aqsa, but released immediately. The catalogue is just too long to carry on. It would not be an exaggeration to say over 100 attempts have been made to destroy Masjid al-Aqsa since 1967, the biggest of which was the fire I talked about last time in 1969. Not a single individual who has tried to destroy Masjid al-Aqsa has been arrested. Not a single individual. Those who have been stopped have been released by the Israelis. They have not served a prison sentence at all. In 1983, a special fund was sent up by the Jewish fundamentalists called the Temple Mount Fund. Its sole purpose, to collect money from Britain, Europe, and in particularly America. And its aim, to blow up Masjid al-Aqsa and replace it with a Jewish temple. And this is no secret. They advertise for their funds in national papers, especially Jewish Hebrew papers. If you go to Jerusalem and Al-Quds, you will find that they give out leaflets of their temple. They will show you exactly how this temple will look and exactly what position it will be. In fact, their audacity goes so far in which they show the temple while maintaining the walls of the present day Masjid al-Aqsa Haramain, so people are not fooled. This is how arrogant they are. Apart from the focus on Masjid al-Aqsa, and this is actually a Zionist ploy, because what the Zionists were trying to do, or have tried to do all along, is to make sure that the Jews marry their ideologies. And the Zionists used Jewish symbols right from the very beginning, from the flag, which was a Jewish symbol, to holidays, the language they use, and the slogans they use, are so that the Jewish people become integrated with the Zionist aspirations. However, even today, there are certain Jews, as we mentioned earlier, who do not accept the Zionist ideology of destroying the Palestinians, but they are in the minority. The majority, unfortunately, are now one and the same. And their famous slogan is, there is no meaning to the state of Israel, there is no meaning for the Jewish people without the state of Israel. And there is no meaning to Israel without Jerusalem as its capital. And there is no meaning to Jerusalem without the temple upon the site of Masjid al-Aqsa. So this is their final goal. They have achieved everything else. The final ambition now is to destroy Masjid al-Aqsa and replace it with a Jewish temple. As soon as they occupied the 1967 borders, what had happened is the Palestinian refugees' number had increased, but also there are 1 million Palestinians who refused to move. They remained in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. This is in 1967. However, the Israeli policies were such that they tried their best to get rid of them. And they began with oppression of utmost heinous nature. The same type of oppression that Hitler carried out upon the Jews in Germany was now being practiced by the Zionists upon the Palestinian Muslims. And there is no difference. It was the same policies. Palestinians could not move freely. Palestinians were restricted to live in certain quarters of Jerusalem and West Bank. They could not live wherever they like. They could not, or they can still not use the roads that are built for Jews. They're only and exclusively for the Jews. The Palestinians cannot use this. Hospitals, schools, the itinerary carries on. Every department of a human life and the needs you can think of, a Palestinian is barred from. To just give you some examples of how they came about this, and I like to quote the Zionists themselves. In 1967, Dayan said that we must understand the motives and the cause for the continued emigration of the Arabs And this is because even if they lack security and lack of employment, because after all, we want to create a new map. In other words, Diane was saying that he wanted to create a new map only for the Jews, and they should employ all policies possible to get rid of the Palestinians. Moshe Dayan, in order to show off, made a speech to a Jewish congregation, and he said, Jewish villages were built in the place of Arab villages. You do not even know the names of these Arab villages, and I do not blame you, because geography books no longer exist. Not only do the books not exist, the Arab villages are not there either. And this is him showing off. He's stating Nahlal, which was a Palestinian village, an Israeli village now, arose in the place of Mahlul, Kibbutz Qibat in the place of Gibta, Kibbutz Sarid in the place of Huneifa, and he carries on with his list of all the Palestinian villages he destroyed. There is not a single place, this is Moshe Dayan's word, there is not a single place built in this country that did not have a former Arab population. They ethnically cleansed, this was the genocide of the Palestinian people. And who is saying this? Moshe Dayan. 4th of April 1969 is the date he actually made this speech. General Nakis, another Zionist, is quoted, "We are talking about emigration of the Arabs. Everything must be done, even paying them money to get them to leave this place." So the ideology was to remove the Palestinians. And alhamdulillah, as the brother has recited for us, they stood the oppression of the Zionists. For all these years, whatever their motives might have been, my brothers, but if it was not for them, the Ummah today, Allahu Alam, would have lost Masjid al-Aqsa. And we are indebted to the brothers and sisters of Palestine. They have not only given their blood, their toil, their life, they have given everything for the Ummah. And it is upon us now to support the Palestinian brothers at this hour of their need. After the 67 war, if we recall, in the 47 war, the Zionists had occupied West Jerusalem. In 67 war, they occupied East Jerusalem. They united West and East Jerusalem and created a Greater Jerusalem Municipality. So they created a one area. And this area had a special status for the Jews, and they brought in special laws in this area so that they could tell the world that this is our capital city and not anybody else's. After the war, several things happened, and the Western media is amazing, and it has indoctrinated most of us as well, that the Palestinians were terrorists, and they brought about and engineered or introduced terrorism in the world. And most of us, I'm sure, will recall Palestinians blowing up aeroplanes. And this is a picture that shows not weekend in New York, but at any given occasion, any opportunity, they will show us Palestinians blowing up planes and say terrorism was born or was created by the Palestinians. But I'll give you a date, my brothers. December 26th, Arabs shot down one Israeli airline in Athens. One. On 28th, to retaliate, 2 days later, Israelis blew up 13 Arab planes while stationed at Beirut airport. We do not get to hear the second part. Arabs, the Palestinians blew up one. They did how many? 13, 2 days later. Whereas the world today is indoctrinated with that single image, but not what happened 2 days later. In 69, Golda Meir becomes the prime minister of Israel, occupied Palestine, and she is the lady who made the speech that there is no such thing as Palestinians. She did not even recognize the existence of the Palestinians. Now, if you recall, when the UN partition plan came, King Abdullah himself became the custodian of Masjid al-Aqsa. After the 67 war, the Israelis took over Masjid al-Aqsa. So he was left stranded now. Most of the Palestinians, and particularly the PLO, moved to Jordan. And a catastrophe took place in Jordan between the Palestinians on the Jordanians. And this is called the Black September. And this took place in 1970, in the month of September. I'll just give you a breakdown of actually what led to the Black September event. The PFLP, which is another branch of Palestinian secular movement, which is against the Zionist movement, hijacked four aeroplanes. They took them to Amman. All the people from there were taken out, and they blew up the aeroplanes. However, what they showed, by now King Hussein had become the king of Jordan, that King Hussein was not in control of his public. And King Hussein then raised the Arab Legion against the PLO, to fight the PLO. This is the same Arab Legion who was called upon in 1947 to fight for the Palestinians. A conflict took place between the Arab Legion, the Jordanian Arab Legion, and the PLO, which resulted in the death of 4,000 Palestinians. 4,000 Palestinians were killed by the Jordanians. The Syrians under Assad went to aid the PLO, so much so that his tank armament moved towards Amman. When they got close enough, the Americans warned Assad, if he moves any further, we will move in and help Jordan. Not only that, the Israelis are on record of saying they were going to the assisting King Hussein against Assad. When this happened, America, Jordan, and Israel aligned. Assad withdrew. And this was the beginning of the end of the PLO in Jordan. A year later, in 1971, whatever few Palestinians were left who were taken to the mountains were driven out of Jordan. And Palestinians, especially in particularly the PLO, moved towards the Gulf states, Kuwait, and in particularly Yasser Arafat and his men moved to Beirut and Lebanon. So this is a small history of how the PLO moved from the Arab states to Beirut. Now, in Egypt, after the 67 war, the Israelis did not stop bombing the Egyptians. The bombing of the Egyptian land carried on till 1970, for 3 years. And in this period, in 3 years, they killed over 100,000 Egyptians. Okay. A plane, the Israeli Defense Force plane, actually at one stage flew over Nasser's home to threaten him. However, they did not actually kill Nasser. Nasser died of a natural death. And in 1970, Anwar Sadat became the prime minister or the president of Egypt. When Anwar Sadat became the president of Egypt, his first goal was to sue for peace with the Israelis. He did not want to confront the Israelis. He wanted peace. In 1971, a famous peace treaty was drawn up by Sadat. He gave it to the Americans so that they could ask the Israelis to go in peace negotiation with him. The Israelis threw out the peace plan. They did not want it. However, Sadat was hell-bent in making peace with the Israelis because he knew that their force was much greater than his, and there was a possibility that Egypt would be destroyed. And he felt that the Americans were not listening to him because at that stage, there were approximately 10 to 20,000 Russian soldiers aiding the Egyptian army. So in 1972, he kicked out each and every Russian out of Egypt, just to please the Americans. Even after doing this, the Americans wouldn't budge. They still didn't want to listen to him. Sadat was left with no option. And hence, we have the war of 1973. Now, there's the biggest myth of the 1973 war is that the Arab countries, in particularly Egypt and Syria, tried to destroy Israel. However, the reality is totally different. What happened was Syria and Egypt tried to regain the territory that was lost in the 1967 battle and nothing else. Only the Egyptians tried to get what they lost in the 1967 on the Egyptian side, and the Syrians tried to get the Golan Heights, and that was it. And this was the main reason why in the latter part, these both two forces are defeated. Because the army did not have a mandate to go any further. And that gave the Israeli army to rearm themselves and have a counterattack and defeat the gains that were made initially. After the first attack in October 1973, there was a great gain by the Egyptians and the Syrians. The Syrians occupied most of the Golan Heights, which they had lost. The Egyptians pushed the Israelis out of the Suez Canal into deep into Sinai. And for the first time, the Israeli army looked that it was not invincible. The Arabs' hands were up and they were feeling great. However, an amazing thing happened. And this is narrated by a colonel in the Israeli army by the name of Ben Gol. He states in his diaries, I got this from his diaries, he says he was stationed at Golan Heights. I was already set to order all my forces to withdraw. Why? Because the Syrian army had advanced so far and they would possibly destroy the whole Israeli army at that stage. I had already picked up the radio telephone, but I said to myself, let's just wait a little longer. I was sure we had lost the battle. This is his words. I was sure we had lost the battle, but for some reason, the Syrians broke and decided to retreat. As to why the Syrians retreated, there is lots of theories. Two of the main is the fact that there was a leak at that time that the Israelis were deciding to use their nuclear weapon against Syria. Because they had decided, they had seen that they were losing the battle on the Golan Heights and they were going to lose the Golan Heights. Israel was going to use the nuclear weapon and that threatened the Syrians. The other possibility is, and this is slight conspiracy because I haven't got any evidence and I've tried so far to give you concrete evidence, is the fact that the Syrians were not safe enough to know what to do after they had occupied the Golan. Whether they advance any further, they just stay there and maintain a defense force. Because they did not have a mandate, they had to move away of a threat of a counterattack of Israelis. However, during this phase, America played a crucial role. In the first few weeks of the Yom Kippur War, or the Ramadan War, the United States of America supplied Israel with 66,000 tons, not amount or equipment, tons of armament. Okay, and this includes fighter planes, Hercules carriers, tanks, you name it, they supplied. Henry Kissinger on October 10th called the Israeli ambassador and stated, you must attack Syria with all the strength because the USA will supply you with everything you need. These are the words of Henry Kissinger recorded by Shima Dinsey, who was then the Israeli ambassador to Washington. Israel looked as if they were going to lose the war. So what they did, from the support from America and the armament they received, they appointed Sharon to attack the Egyptians in any manner and way he liked. What Sharon did was to avoid the Sinai and went straight for Cairo. He was 63 kilometers from hitting Cairo with the armament that was supplied by America. This even frightened the Americans. Because as soon as after Sadat had kicked out the Russians, when the war began, Sadat had brought back the Russians. This would bring America and Russia, at that time, great enemies, right? Both nuclear powers. America was so frightened that they sent their envoy and told Israel, in particular Sharon, to stop. Sharon stopped his advance 63 kilometers from hitting Cairo. War was stopped because America intervened and a peace treaty was signed between Sadat and the Israelis. However, what this did was Sadat's dream of having peace with Israel was fulfilled by bringing America into the equation, because now America was directly involved. America now had to be on the side of the Egyptians, because if it didn't, it knew that Russia would fully aid Egypt. And Egypt had shown the ability to hit Israel. So this was a great political move. America moves in 1973, and in 1975 helped sign a non-aggressive pact between Egypt and Israel. In 1977, November, most of us will recall, Anwar Sadat actually went to occupied Palestine. He went to Jerusalem. He went to the Israeli embassy, Israeli parliament called the Knesset, and actually gave a speech there. But what we did not realize, a lot of people, especially in the West, and even in Egypt at that time, were missold what was happening. They thought a peace was being signed between the Muslims and the Israelis. In reality, what was happening, it was not a peace treaty between either the Muslims and the Israelis, or the Muslims and the Arabs, or Muslims and the Egyptians and the Palestinians. It was a peace treaty exclusively and solely between the Egyptians and the Israelis. What this did was a catastrophic effect upon the Palestinian-Egyptian relationship. Because of this peace treaty, whatever Israel did or does from now on, 1975, the Egyptians would not do anything about it, because they were in peace with Israel. In other words, they cut their hand off from aiding the Palestinians, the Egyptians, by signing this peace treaty. And it gave the Israeli the free hand to do whatever they like. In 1970s, another great event takes place. As far as the Israelis are concerned, the invasion of Lebanon. I would like to narrate this because it not only will show us how the Zionists work, how their expansionist policies are implemented in their brains, but also the weaknesses of the Ummah. And it is sad. The pretext, again, by the Israelis that was propounded was, we need to occupy Lebanon because of security reasons. However, if anybody has studied anything about the Zionists, the greater Israeli map of the Arab coalition is the Lebanon. Muslim supremacy in this country is artificial and can easily be overthrown. A Christian state ought to be set up here, with its southern frontiers on the River Litani. This river is their demarcation, remember. We would sign a treaty of alliance with the state. Then we would have broken the strength of the Arab Legion, and we can bomb thereafter Amman. We would wipe out Transjordan. Thereafter, Syria would fall. And thereafter, if Egypt still dared to make war on us, we would bomb Port Said, Alexandria, and Cairo. We should thus end the war and would have put paid to Egypt, and we'd have created the greater Israel, our dreams of our ancestors. This is Ben-Gurion in which year? 1948. This is the megalomania ideology, the expansionist ideologies of the Zionists. Now this plan, this ideology of the Zionists had to be put into practice. In 1954, Moshe Dayan states, and this is been stated in the diary of Moshe Shirat, who then became the acting prime minister of Israel. This is from his diary. He states, Dayan stating, that according to me, the only thing that is necessary to carry out this expansion up to Litani River is to find an officer, even if he's just a major. We should either win his heart or buy him with money, to make him to agree to declare himself as the savior of the Maronite population. The Maronites are the Christian population of Lebanon. Then the Israeli army will enter Lebanon, will occupy the necessary territory, and will create a Christian regime, which we will ally itself with Israel. So in effect, we should plan all this. The territory from the Litani southward will be totally annexed and will become Israel. And this was in 1954. I would like to, it is amazing, each and every word of what Dayan and Ben-Gurion say actually works out and how they plan this. A few days later, Sharad wrote, the chief of staff supports a plan to hire a Lebanese officer who will agree to serve as a puppet so that the Israeli army may appear to respond to his appeals. In other words, they would select somebody from Lebanon, make him allied to the Israeli, then he would make an international appeal to say, Israel, please come and help us against the Muslim population of Lebanon. That would give a pretext for Israel to go and attack Lebanon and occupy it. The stage was set. On 16th of May 1955, Ben-Gurion stated, Israel should provoke Lebanon's Muslims to attack the Lebanon Christians, in the hope of igniting a civil war in Lebanon. In 1975, their plans now take place. The Israelis make contact with one person called Major Haddad. Major Haddad was a Falangist, a Christian, and they established an army called the SLA, the South Lebanese Army. Okay. Once they made contact with Major Haddad and his allies with the Israelis, Major Haddad now begins the oppression of the Muslims. It is no secret that Major Haddad was supplied by arms, money, even manpower by the Israelis to carry out his oppression upon the Palestinian, particularly the Palestinian refugees in Lebanon. All that was remaining now was a requirement that Haddad makes an appeal to the Israelis for them to attack them. And the stage was perfectly set for them. In 1978, the PLO entered Israel and carried out a commando attack. They killed 34 Israelis, and the 8 commandos who came through also died. Immediately, 20,000 prepared Israeli soldiers attacked Lebanon. 100,000 Lebanese and Palestinians were made refugees in this attack in 1978. After international condemnation, Israel withdrew. However, they made Haddad the person responsible for all the area they had occupied. No secret. And all the, basically that was a belt between, a border between Israel and Greater Lebanon. The southern border of Israel now becomes in the hand of Haddad. In the next few years, Israel carried on bombarding Lebanon, in particularly Palestinian refugee camps. They tried to break the Palestinian resistance. Sharon, who was then in the Ministry of Defense, could not take this. So in January 1982, I would like you to just note this month because it's very important. In January 1982, Sharon secretly sneaked into Lebanon to meet a person called Bashir Gamal. Bashir Gamal was then going to stand for an election that was to take place in August, 8 months away. Sharon promised Bashir that the Israelis, just before the election, will attack and occupy Lebanon. We create a havoc. In the election, we will create a situation whereby you will win the election and we will ally with you. The ideologies and the philosophies of the forefathers of the Zionists, Ben Gurion and Moshe Dayan, now are being acted. All those plans are now being carried out. Sharon made a pact with Bashir Gamal, and it was amazing, and this is quoted. One of the Lebanese turned around to Sharon and said, "Are you joking? Are you really going to attack and occupy Lebanon so we will win?" He says, "Do not take me for this. Don't take this as a joke. We will come, and you better believe it." The international players at that stage, still we had a problem with, on one side, Russia and America. So Israel didn't get a green light from the Yanks. Sharon went to Washington, and Haig quotes in his diary, in his memoirs, he said that I told Sharon that without due provocation, the effect of you attacking Lebanon on the U.S. would be devastating. In other words, in plain English, he was telling the Israelis, make sure that the provocation is good enough to stand up in the eyes of the international community so that we can at least say that you are provoked to hit Lebanon. And this was a green signal given by the Americans upon to the Israelis. In the spring of 1982, Israel went back to the Americans, and this is again recorded. However, the Americans would not accept the reasons. They said the provocation is still not strong enough. We cannot allow you to attack. However, in June 1982, in London, the Israeli ambassador was murdered by Abu Nidal's group. Abu Nidal's group claimed responsibility of killing him. If anybody knows anything about this area, Abu Nidal was allied with Iraq. He had nothing to do with the PLO, with Lebanon. The Israelis knew that, knew it, the international community knew it, and the Americans knew it. But that was a good enough reason for the Israelis to attack Lebanon. In June, Israeli amassed 200,000 soldiers and attacked Lebanon. The soldiers moved and flattened everything as they moved towards Beirut. Beirut, which was known as the Paris of the East, was reduced to rubble in this expedition of the Israelis. The Israelis went through a very big refugee camp called Ain al-Halwa. They surrounded this refugee camp, and for 7 days, while moving forward, they killed each and every Palestinian person in that camp. On June 8th, Begin went to the Knesset and said we should sign a peace treaty with Syria. On June 11th, Israel signed a ceasefire with Syria. Okay, and on June 12th, Begin ordered the Israeli army to attack the Syrians after having signed a day before a peace treaty. The Syrians were relaxed because they had just signed a peace treaty, and the Israeli attacked and flattened them. This was the 85th Brigade, which was in Lebanon. On June 13, Begin went to the Israeli public and told them, we have no intention of entering Beirut. That evening, the very same evening, international television and the media were showing pictures of Israeli tanks in the heart of Beirut. Israel poured into Beirut, destroyed Arafat, and destroyed the PLO. Arafat sued for peace. Israeli demanded that he and his men should leave Lebanon, which they did. 15,000 Palestinian soldiers at the time, Palestinian army, including Yasser Arafat, was thrown out of Lebanon. Most of them went to Tunisia. Some were dispersed in different parts of the world. The main hierarchy of the PLO was based in Tunisia at this stage. This was in August 21st. On August 23rd, 2 days later, under the influence of Israelis, the election took place while the Israelis were still in Lebanon. And guess who won the election? Bashir Gamal. This is democracy at work. However, as soon as Bashir became the Prime Minister of Israel, of Lebanon, he was asked to go to Israel and meet Begin. Bashir was taken there in a private helicopter at night. This was not a public event. The Israelis told him to make Haddad, who was Israel's right-hand man, a minister in his government. Bashir refused. Bashir thought he had just had a mandate from his people, therefore he did not wish to listen to the Israelis. This was on 13th of September. On 14th of September, Bashir was assassinated. Nobody knows where, by whom, but you can make your guesses. In 1982, Begin's minister again states that Israel has now an excellent opportunity to establish a new order in Lebanon. The Israeli Defense Force must be prepared for a long stay in Lebanon. It is perhaps also possible to integrate the strip south of Litani. Now they are trying to implement their desires of the greater Israel in the southern parts. The rabbis started preaching their halacha and their dreams of establishing one more time as a chosen people their land in a foreign country, really. The greatest massacre, genocide, open genocide, acknowledged by the West, now takes place. Remember, all the Palestinian men, especially those who were fighting, were all being driven out from Lebanon. The people who are left behind in Lebanon now, as far as the Palestinian community was concerned, were the innocent civilians. All of them were in refugee camps. Women, children, infirm, and few totally innocent people were left. Between 15th and 18th of September, Israelis surrounded the camps of Sabra and Shatila. What happened was twofold. While they surrounded the camps, Haddad and his men moved into the camps of Sabra and Shatila. So first thing they did was all the men were taken out of the camp, their hands were tied behind their backs, put on trucks and taken out of the camp. Those that were left behind, Haddad's men went house to house, from alley to alley, and killed each and every individual. All those innocent people were murdered while the Israelis had stopped the international community entering that camps.
The world media was not allowed to go in. They did not stop the killing even at night time, in order to show the way to the phalanges and the SLA and Haddad and his men. The Israelis provided with light by firing instruments that lit up the sky so that they could find innocent Palestinians to kill. They cold-bloodedly murdered everyone. What had happened was amazing, and it has just been discovered recently, and I mean recently, a few months ago. After this event, thousands of people were missing. They could not locate them. And this was the young man that were taken out of his camp. Nobody knew what happened to him. And they discovered what they did. They put this young man, young people, in the backs of trucks, Israeli trucks, and took them to a stadium outside Beirut. Those that were not killed were interrogated. Imagine, my brothers, interrogation of thousands of our men. And each and every one was again killed in a slow, brutal manner. This was carried out by Sharon. Sharon masterminded this murder. This is the genocide of the Palestinian people. The same Sharon who today dines and wines with the leaders of the world, so-called civilized nations. When the international community wants to bring him to trial, they say it is not possible to bring a leader of a country to trial while he has got a mandate from his people. Whereas in 1982, Kahan report, Israeli report, stated Sharon, or implicated Sharon for the death or the massacres of the Palestinians in Sabra and Shatila. And it further went that Sharon is not fit to serve in public office. This is the report by the Zionists themselves, only years later for the Israeli public to elect him as their leader, so that he could carry out the massacres, so that he could subjugate the Ummah and the Palestinian people in the brutal manner that he had done in 1982. There is no other reason. Thinking that through subjugation, through oppression and demoralizing the Palestinian, they will get their dream and fulfill their ambition. In this expedition, 30 to 50,000 Lebanese and Palestinians were killed. How many? 30 to 50,000. As to that, those that were made refugees, Allahu Alam, we don't know. And of this, the majority of the people that were killed were civilians, innocent civilians. What had happened, my brothers, after the PLO had moved out of Lebanon in 1982, a great event took place, as far as I'm concerned. With the PLO out, the Palestinians were left rudderless, sailing in the sea of oppression, of the Israeli oppression. The emergence of Islamic movement takes place now. Because the secular PLO, the PFLP, and the major secular movement up until now within the Palestinian community had gone out, new leaders with grassroots support emerge. And one man in particular, Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, emerges. Sheikh Ahmed Yassin started the movement of Jihad and Hamas. As soon as he did that in 1980, he was arrested. Him and most of the leaders were put in bars. However, his movement Islamicized the Palestinian community, and they now are a greater threat because they fight with the Kalima Shahadat behind them. Up until then, up until this point, the PLO was a secular movement. And the PLO, one thing it did was amazing. The reason the PLO was funded by the Arab countries is because the Arabs absolve their responsibility of the Palestinians. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because the Arabs were saying that the issue of the Palestinians must be solved by the PLO. It is not our responsibility. It is not the responsibility of Jordan, Syria, or Egypt. Because they wanted to create nation states, it was their problem. It was the problem. A problem in Egypt is a problem for Egyptians. A problem in Syria is a problem for Syrians. A problem of Palestinians must be solved, therefore, by the PLO. They did not wish the Ummah to unite behind this problem. And the expulsion of the PLO led to the reverse of what their ambition was. And the Ummah then unites for the needs of the Palestinians. Towards the end of the 80s, the first Intifada begins. And I will leave my talk here, inshallah. And next week, we will talk between the first Intifada that started in the late 80s and inshallah up till today. So that will be our final talk. But before I go, I'd just like to say, before we finish today, I'd just like to say one thing. The relationship between America and Israel. Why the love affair? In order to understand this, we really need a full lecture, but just to give you a few points, we must understand, and hopefully by now it is apparent to us, that Israel was created because of a Jewish problem for the West against the Jews. Because the West had hated the Jews, they took them out of their countries and planted them in the heart of the Arab land. This had a benefit for them as well. An Arab state in the heart, an Israeli state in the heart of Arab land would create friction between different Arab regimes depending on how close Israel was with that Arab regime. There would be animosity and mistrust between each other. So if Israel makes a peace treaty with Egypt, Syria does not trust Egypt, Jordan does not trust Egypt. If Israel has a good relationship with Jordan, Syria is suspicious, Egypt is even suspicious, because they do not know who is dealing with them in which manner. This destabilizes the whole region. This is one of the main reasons. Also, America needs Israel as much as Israel needs America. For the American economy to survive, one of the greatest assets America has got to sell the world is arms. American arm industry turns American economy around. That is why America is the most powerful economy, because it sells the most sophisticated, most expensive arms. American arm industry is into billions, not millions, but billions. So what happens, this is how it works. America gives arms to Israel. Israel does not buy arms from America. America gives money to Israel, which it basically buys arms from America. Therefore, America literally gives arms to Israel. This creates a threat to all the Arab nations. Therefore, all these Arab nations go to America to buy arms to counteract Israel's arms. So they buy arms from whom? America. Yet, the arms America sells these Arab countries are of second generation to what they sold the Israelis. So every year on year, Israeli gets more up-to-date arms, the Arab countries get one generation down. So this is an ongoing wheel that they have created. The second way Israel helps America is amazing. America is a democracy and is a very nice country. It cannot be seen to work with rogue states. Classic example, in the 1970s and 80s, the United Nations had an embargo with South Africa. It was an apartheid country, the West would not deal with it. So what does America do? South Africa was a big arms buyer, big industry. America sells its arms to Israel, and then Israel sells those arms to South Africa. Hence, American arms are sold. In effect, Israel acts as a broker for American arm industry. They do the same for Guatemala, they did the same for the Shah of Iran, they are doing the same now for India. India has signed a multi-billion pound deal with Israel buying American arms. America cannot sell India their arms directly. If they did, Pakistan would be upset. The Muslim world would be upset. They can't do that. So what they do? They sell it to Israel, and Israel sells it to India. And this is the vicious circle. Again, with Israel being there, Now the Arabs, the elite, the Arab rich, rather than elite, the Arab rich would not invest their money in their own countries. Because for them to invest their billions would be risky, because the area is unstable. So what they do, because of this instability, they take the money out of their countries and invest it in the West. Therefore, you see streets upon streets in London owned by Arabs. America, same thing, shares. All these are owned by Arabs. They will not invest. If they invest this money in their countries would come up. So Israel is a perfect implantation in the heart of Arab land. And that's why for the Americans, they cannot afford to see peace or reconcile Israelis and the Palestinians. They need a low-level friction. What is happening now is an extreme for them, which is dangerous. But they require a low-level conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians so that America stays in the background and enjoys the economy behind this. This is one of the main reasons why the love affair between the West and Israelis. A lot of people think of Israeli lobby as being a very powerful lobby, especially AIPAC, an organization in America. They're not very powerful. Nobody can bend somebody else against their own will if that other person has no benefit. America, Britain benefits by aiding Israel. And that is why American Israeli lobby is effective. The other point is Western democracy, especially American democracy, comes at a price. It is not free. It is for the rich. American elections cost up to $100 million. And to finance these elections, they turn to the Israeli financiers. The rich Jewish people in America finance both parties. So it doesn't matter whether the Republican wins or the Democrat wins. They have their man in office.
And finally, there is the equation of the oil. The oil that is produced in the Middle East must, by all means and purpose, be shipped to the West. And the West will do anything to ensure that this status quo maintains. And this is the vicious circle we're in at the moment. Just ask Sheikh Ibrahim Sahib to make dua, please. Maulana, if you'd like to come forward. Jazakallah.